Last week we took up the story of the birth of Moshe, and today we're going to be taking up the story, his early life, I guess. It's very sparse when it comes to biography. It's very difficult to compose a true biography. So the danger with these things is that you start to speculate, you know, because the Torah does not reveal the inner life of its heroes. Does not. Doesn't tell you about what they were feeling and what they were thinking, whether they had a sense of humor or whatever. You don't really get a sense of the personality. Because the Torah is not interested in the glorification of personality, of man. These people are great because of the deeds that they did in the situations they were confronted with, and because of their tremendous belief in God and their ability to overcome all of the resistances and the problems. So it's the deeds, or also the failures. Also the failures. But it's not really... We're not supposed to get attached to them as heroes, as you will find in other cultures. So therefore I would think it's very difficult, but we're just going to analyze whatever stories were given to us, so we'll see what we can learn from them. So last week we learned that the Moshe Rabbeinu was existed because of the miraculous birth and the fact that they managed to hide him. You see, they had to hide him. So that too was miraculous. And then that plan, it's a tremendous illustration of what the rabbis say, that a person should never give up hope and never give up faith, even if the sword is on your neck, so to speak. And that was, what were the chances that he would have survived? They put him into the river. And we'll see today that Moshe Rabbeinu knew who his family was, and they knew who his brothers were. And I maintain that that's a problem. I tried to give my theory last week that it had to do, and I just as I was looking over the notes preparing, I just saw a commentary that I hadn't seen, and I think he bolsters the point about the name of Moshe. Because when you read it, it's just a fact, you know, she called him Moshe because I pulled him out of the water. Okay, you know, like what, there's always a deeper significance. So I wanted to say that this fact that Moshe Rabbeinu survived that way is very, very important in his whole development. I'm going to put forward something new on the basis of what this commentary said. Last week I said it's significant because it gave him a tremendous curiosity about his origins. And I told you the significance of a name. A person's name, especially when that name is really telling the story. Now, any person would be terribly interested to know that he was, as a baby, he was put into the water. And the daughter of the king came along and saved him. But it gave him a special curiosity then. So why? Well, what caused it? About the Hebrews. So you're from the Hebrews and there was this decree. All of this, we have to assume, was told to him. But I wanted to go further and say that he wanted to find out what the circumstances were about his parents. And then the story of the midwives. Because there was a midwife and they paid, they probably kept records of these things. So all the mother could do was direct him to the midwife, not knowing that the midwife was really his mother. And then they connected, and as a youngster, he had a connection, and they taught him about everything. So, see, because to me, the Ramban raises the question, how did he know that he was Jewish? You know, he got bigger, he was like a teenager, and he went out to see his brothers. So, how do you... All right, let's assume then, the fact that he was Jewish, that's not difficult, because they would tell him, you know, Paro's daughter would tell him, that's not difficult that he knew that they were his brothers, but that he cared so much. Stood up, that he put his life on the line. That just doesn't happen overnight. So there must have been some kind of a connection with them. Now there's another connection. You see that he knew about his brothers and he cared intensely about them. And if he was just brought to the palace when he was a couple of years old and he grew up as an Egyptian, ironically, Pharaoh himself was raising the man who would be the one to defeat him. So it's a distant kind of thing. What connection would he have? Jews become assimilated. Unfortunately, Jews become assimilated. And it's true, even today, the amount of support for Israel, for example, among American Jews is not what it used to be. And the key factor is the extent of assimilation. The more assimilated, the less observant and religious, as a generalization, obviously, as a generalization, not true for every individual. The Israel may still be important, but it's not on the top in terms of priorities. You know, they, what's your number one priority? Even in the election, you're voting for on the basis of Israel. So, though, as you get more observant, whether I'm not saying Orthodox and say whatever you are, if you're more observant, then your Judaism is really significant to you, then you will tend to be more concerned about Israel because it's part of our religion. That's why I was saying that the Israeli government doesn't realize how what an ally religion is. There's a tension between you know, the secular and the religious in Israel, but they really should get together, because the greatest guarantee of Israel's survival is teaching Torah. If you're not rooted in the religion, you may identify with Israel, you may not, but you don't have that anchor. But if you're three times a day we're praying for Jerusalem, so then that's a guarantee that you're going to support Israel in a strong way.
Rabbi,
this is true even in Israel, because the more secular you are, all right, so they're Israelis, but they're just culturally, and they don't identify with Judaism, so the idea of, you know, like constantly fighting for the country and defending it, and the whole attitude changes. However, those in Israel, the religious, because it's that sense of alienation doesn't exist among them. I'm talking about religious Zionists, because you're right, not all the religious are Zionistic, that's for sure. But among those who are religious and Zionist, there's been a tremendous increase of these. It's called Hezder special programs where they serve in the military, and increasingly they're going into the elite units, and you know that's a good thing for the future. These people will be in key positions. You'll find more of these kinds of people in governmental positions, and because they have a tremendous dedication, not to downplay the dedication of all Israelis, we wouldn't do that, but when you transmit it to the next generation, it becomes tough. It's like in America too. America, the majority of the youth, they don't want to go in the army. They don't want to fight for the country. It's like a certain alienation about these things. So they tend to have different views. That's a problem. Anyways, getting back to here, there's another element though, I think. Because if you see the manner in which Moshe Rabbeinu went out and put his life on the line for his fellow Jews, as I said, it's hard to reconcile it with just because he knew that as a baby. But don't you see another element of identification there? You see the force of identification. He himself was a victim. He was a victim as a baby. He was destined for destruction. And he was saved. He was saved. That's the significance of the name. Now, I just saw this for the first time. It's amazing how you can, there's so many commentaries. I overlooked it. I don't have it. I just highlighted it. This is one of the great commentators. As I mentioned to you last week, the importance of a name, like the fact that Rabbi Moshe Feinstein said that the name Moshe meant a lot to him, because Moshe was the one who decided the law. So he became a great decisor. I mean, it had an effect upon him. Obviously, just having a certain name is not enough. You have to have these skills. But given that you have those things, that determination. Now, he makes a beautiful point. Why did she name him Moshe? Because I pulled you out of the water. All right, but that's to give a name? So he says no, because that was the point of the name was that you should help others just like you were saved. You should save others. You should be a savior. So that's the whole biography of Moshe Rabbeinu. That is to say, that element that he can't just stand idly by, and we'll see in the second story when he has to leave, and then the daughters of Yisro and the shepherds start up with them, and he's the same characteristic. The idea of Moshe being someone who's a savior, in the practical sense, obviously, and in the spiritual sense, that goes back to his name. That's what he says it means. That when she gave him the name, she didn't just mean it as a remembrance of something in the past, but know that that's a characteristic. You will partake of that characteristic. And that must have meant a lot to him, that his own mother, who raised him, saved him. And that he owed his existence to the fact there was oppression, there was tyranny, but there were people that fought against it and saved his life. So that itself gave him a tremendous psychological impetus to want to save others. So let's see what happens. So now we have a better context to understand what motivated Moshe Rabbeinu. That as soon as he got older, he began to think about the plight of his brethren and why this happened and what was it. So he went out to sea. and Vayetze Alechav. Now, this is a fascinating pasuk, because it mentions the word Echav, his brothers, twice. And he went out to his brothers, and he saw in their afflictions, so he saw it. But saw means more than just looking at it visually. The Torah doesn't have to tell us that. You understand. It means it got to him. Got to him. Bothered him. Then it says, that's the first thing that he saw. Then he saw a particular incident. And he saw an Egyptian hitting, striking. Ish Ivri, a Jewish man, may echa from his brothers. Now that clearly, that second from his brothers is clearly superfluous. We already know. We know who that the Hebrews are his brothers. It just told us that in the first. So that's an extra word. That's a typical biblical device to invite you to think here. There's a point being made. Because there's nothing unnecessary in the Torah. Every time it mentions, even a word, a nuance, is to convey a point. See, the first time is, there's different levels of commitment. So, you can read about something that's happening with Jews somewhere. So, your brother is, you identify, it bothers you. And you may, a lot of times it bothers you, you may rant about it, and then let's go out and have lunch. I mean, a lot of times. Right? I mean, that's the way people are. Sure, you make a whole tumult, this and that. All right, we made a tumult, now we can go home. The question is, what are you going to do about it? Does it bother you enough that you're going to skip a meal? Are you going to lose any sleep over this? Right? That's, many people are very, very bothered as long as they're comfortable in America. All right, maybe they'll go down. There was the demonstration against Ahmadinejad. Okay, going to the Israel parade, that's important, that's a very important thing to do. I think it's a mitzvah to go. It's a very good, because you have to show people that the American Jews, it's not only, there's non-Jews there as well, but primarily it's all about Jews and the politicians, etc. They show that, but basically it's the numbers that count. And the fact that Jews care about Israel, that registers. That's very, very important. And it's a good mitzvah because it's very humble. You're just another person. You don't get any cover there. No big deal that you, but you go. And you're walking, so you're doing something. You're not just staying home. But still, you realize, and I realize, that even that, I mean, nobody should really take any credit for doing something. It's minimal. You take a train in or you drive it. Oh, well, it's not a big deal in the big picture. But what about if somebody is being attacked? Somebody's being attacked. And, of course, you call 9/11, but Moshe couldn't call 9/11. So, is he still your brother? Is he still your brother? That's why, Vayake, then he says, he saw an Egyptian, Maka Ish Ivri. At first he was hitting a Jew. It was an Ish Ivri. But then, are you ready? What's the degree of brother? Are you going to get in there? Are you going to fight? That's Me'achav. That's a higher, that's what it's. Two different levels. It was, yeah, it was my brother, still my people, but that's it. That's as far as I go. But two, are you willing to stand up and put your life on the line and fight? With all these risks, so that's a different degree. That's why it points out. It fashioned a different degree of connectedness to his brothers. So now he was really part of the people. There's no going back. He had to make that choice. That's what I would say it's telling you. To go out and look and study the situation, that's good, that's nice, that shows that you care. But maybe, who knows, I don't know what I'm going to do about it. But then a situation occurred which demanded that that's one way or the other. That if Moshe would have walked away, would have made excuses, then that's it. He's not really a brother. A real brother is someone that takes it to heart, that can't tolerate. See, that's when he's Moshe Rabbeinu. That's when he's Moshe. That he saves. Just like he was saved, he saves as well. That's a very important point. All right, so let's continue the story. It's a very fascinating story. Now, we have to assume that it wasn't just a case. I don't think it was just a case where somebody slapped somebody in the face. I mean, according to Rashi, he was beating up on him. He was going to destroy him. He would have died. The Jewish fellow would have died. So he had to save. It was a matter of saving his life. Because if it wasn't that, if it was just, you know, a lesser thing, just hitting him, just giving him a blow or two, but then not killing him. You know, being rough, like police sometimes, you know, when they're taking away a suspect, they'll give him a few blows. I don't think Moshe would have intervened Because you have to use intelligence. Would it have been worth it? Because he was taking a tremendous risk, and his life would be in danger. So I don't think so. I think that it was very, very serious. He assessed the situation, and this person was going to be killed, or close to it, could have been killed. And what he did was to save a life. Then it says, "Vayifin kovacho." He looked all around. "Vayar ki enish," and he saw that there was no plain. Plain meaning is that he was careful. He saw that there was nobody there. So wherever it was, some side road, deserted place, whatever it happened to be, that this Rashi says this is a pshat. I mean, you don't have to take it, but that this particular individual had designs on the wife of the Jew, and he was trying to, like, you know, get rid of him. So it was a deserted area, and he saw that there was nobody, there was no man. So he smote the Egyptian, and he buried him in the sand. That's a fundamental principle that you're obligated to. This is called the principle of Rodef. If someone is chasing after somebody else to kill him, so then not only is the victim permitted to defend himself, obviously self-defense, but everybody else who has the possibility, who has the chance, is obligated to intervene, and even at the cost of his own life. So Moshe Rabbeinu did the right thing in terms of what Judaism teaches. Now, at this point in time, it seems like it was okay in terms of the practical now, because he was careful, he looked around, and there was nobody there. So he'd get away with it. He hit him. Nobody knew. Now, what's interesting is the second day. This is an amazing teaching. He went out on the next day, and behold, there were two Jews fighting. Now that tells you something. Doesn't it tell you something? I mean, is this not throughout our entire history? That when we're faced by a common enemy, instead of putting aside all the petty things that divide us to get together, isn't that vital? And yet, during the Holocaust, whenever attempts were made, some attempts were made by the various Jewish organizations to do something, to work in unison. And in Ben Hecht's book, A Child of the Century, he has one chapter of about 100 pages on the work that he did with the Committee to Rescue Jews and so on and so forth. He describes a meeting, because he became fully involved, and he wrote these dramatic presentations which they produced in Madison Square Garden. And he was publicizing to the American people the plight of what was going on, and trying to get senators involved and so on. And so they had this idea to do something in common. It was taking out some ads, but all the Jewish organizations, the American Jewish Congress and the B'nai B'rith and all the organizations would be behind it. So the person that was working with him, it was Bergson, was the individual from Israel. He was coordinating it, but he knew his stuff. He knew the Jewish organizations. So Hecht had the idea to get them all in his apartment and have a meeting. He couldn't believe that all they're being asked to do was to sign on a newspaper, a full-page newspaper ad about what was going on. And the other guy, Peter Bergson, was telling him, okay, he's like laughing, it's not going to, and Hecht didn't believe it. He said, what are you talking about? There's no way they're not going to go along with this. So they decided to have the meeting. And everybody gets up, they all agree with the cause. Then a fight breaks out, but my organization cannot be in the same thing with this one. And this one gets up, and they start, and he describes it. You have to read, he describes it. And he said, before you know it, people are yelling and screaming at each other and this and that. And then that's the rest of the meeting. And they all walk over, thank him very much for his doing, and they all leave, and nobody signed on. That is a snapshot. So you read it, and you know, it's like an insane asylum. How is such a thing possible? And they're not even being asked to do anything other than to sponsor an ad, which they all agreed with the content, but the same divisions, organizational things, if I tell you... You told it to a guy like Hecht, who was never part of that world. He couldn't believe it. He's like, how's that What are you talking about? You're all fighting. We're all fighting for the same thing. So, two Jews are fighting. And Moshe says to the Russia, to the wicked one, why are you hitting your friend? That's this point. Aren't you both Jews? Aren't you both friends? What are you fighting about? Especially at a time like this when you should be working together. But that's what's called baseless hatred. Sinat chinam, sinat chinam. Baseless hatred. And what did they do? So they turned against Moshe. Moshe is the wicked one. And he said, who made you into a person? Who are you? To be a ruler and a judge. That's even worse, a judge. Because people, it's one thing if you try to rule people, to tell people what to do. Telling people what to do is bad. Nobody likes to be told what to do. But there's something that's worse, to judge other people. To say that what you're doing is wrong, that people can't. Who are you? By whose standards am I wrong? Who are you? Who made you the judge? But look at the next thing. Are you planning to kill me? Just like you killed the Egyptian? And now Moshe was very afraid. See? He wasn't afraid of the Egyptians. But he was afraid of the Jews. And he said, Ochein no dahadava. I see that it's known. But there's a deeper meaning. You have to, Rashi, now the matter is known. That's a very, very powerful statement. The plain meaning is, what's known? It's known that I killed the Egyptian. So he has to be concerned about that. But Rashi says that he's also alluding to something else. Because there's different levels in the Torah. And he's saying that something else is known. Now something else has become known to me. That I was wondering about this. How did Israel sin from all the 70 nations that they should become afflicted with this hard labor? Well, why did it happen to why did it happen to them? That's another thing he was thinking about. That's something you don't just study. All right, so the Egyptians and they're evil. That's fine, but there's another aspect to the story, and that is, there's got to be a reason. Did you do anything to allow yourself to fall into this situation? Now he says, now I know. He says, now I know. I see that they deserve it. Because instead of resisting, they were complaining. They were complaining, saying, well, what you did is wrong. What right do you have? You violated the laws of the land. So they went, that means to say that they were so assimilated that whatever, they found justification for whatever part that. That's exactly the standpoint that they're coming from. What you did, we know what you did, and what you did is wrong. Which means that they'd become so, here they are, defending the cruel system that was oppressing them. But the need to be loyal citizens of the country, and not to be different, not to be apart. So Moshe says, that's what got you into the situation. It's a failure on your part. That's what Torah is about, that you have to analyze and you have to have a capability for self-criticism and criticism of the Jews too. We can't just assume that we have enemies and we're always the innocent victims. We always have to question ourselves too. Did we play a role in it? What did we do to bring about this situation? There's many, many painful questions. We read the warning signs. The handwriting on the wall. Did we get out when we could have gotten out? Or were we know? We viewed ourselves as being loyal citizens of this country. They could never, ever do that to us. I mean, these are very, very significant questions, but it goes back to the experience in Egypt. But let's ask ourselves a question. The question has to be raised, though. How did they know about it? There was nobody there. Did Moshe miss something? Was somebody hiding somewhere? The Pasuk makes it very, very clear that Vayar, he saw that there was no man, and he smote him. Now,
the victim must have told.
This is an amazing thing. It has to be the victim, because there were only two people that knew about it. It was Moshe and the victim. Now, you'd think that both, well, Moshe, of course, is not going to tell. But you'd think that the victim, for any reason, out of gratitude, out of practicality, you see something very, very important from this. You're going to learn. You see something. Man cannot keep a secret. It's an impossibility. It's an impossibility. And you see, because every time, let's face it, very often someone tells you something and can't tell this to anyone and you agree. Except there's one exception in your mind. And that you don't feel guilty about that. You always have to have that one exception. Right? And that person also you tell, but don't tell anybody. Because I gave my word, I'm not going to say it. I'm only telling you because I know. Now this person can't keep it in either. This person must. It's a law of nature. You've got to tell. So this person also has one person. Okay? And before you know it, everybody knew about it. Now, you have to analyze that. You think about that. If something, there are certain things. Now, of course, I don't mean this literally. I'm sure that there are certain things you could keep a secret. But if it's too big, think about that. If you witnessed something that was so unbelievable, that was such a miracle, and you're supposed to hear it, you can't keep quiet. It's an impossibility. If something great, imagine if you like won a $50 million lottery, and for some reason you couldn't share it, or anything along those lines, or whatever, you know, you were in Washington and you were walking along and the president, and he invited you to the White House, and you had a meal with, there's certain kind of things that would like, you'd have to tell somebody. It's like almost, it's an impossibility. It's an impossibility. In fact, it's lacking in my whole experience of it, unless I could share it. At least with one person. Yeah, let's say we give you, but you have to have it. So therefore, that's what happened over here. That this was such an amazing thing to him, that here he was being beat up, he would have been killed, and this Moshe comes along, who's raised in the house of Pharaoh, and he intervenes, and he killed, he had to tell it to somebody. I don't think he did it maliciously. He wasn't doing it maliciously. But it shows you a characteristic of human nature and how dangerous it is. How dangerous it is, and how much in all the social circles, how many things that were supposed to be quiet weren't kept quiet. And they got out. And look at the danger. Look at the danger that was caused by a simple thing. An inability to keep a secret. I don't think his point was to protect himself, so that if the Egyptians found out, because to the contrary, then they would say, well, why don't you go to the police? Well, he did not report it to the police. So what he did was, at this point in time, Moshe was safe. At this point in time, these two people, according to the rabbis, it's Dasan and Aviram, who were enemies of Moshe. They certainly were after this. But at this point in time, they weren't going to snitch on Moshe. In other words, Sinat Chinam is what destroyed the situation. Again, it's not because they heard about it, and they probably enjoyed it. Wow, there's somebody out there that had the guts. Great story. So they weren't going to snitch. Nobody wanted to snitch on Moshe at that point in time. So therefore, this victim who gave it out would still be in trouble because you didn't report it to the police. You just told somebody else. So you knew about it and you didn't report it to us. What happened was, so that's the first thing. Something as trivial as that, which seems so trivial. The inability to keep something quiet. People suffer from that. There's always leaks. Governments up, there's always leaks going on, and it's very, very dangerous. You can't, and people's feelings get hurt unnecessarily when they don't have to, and so on and so forth. It breaks up marriages, it breaks up lives. But afterwards, when Moshe rebuked them, they were lacking that characteristic of brotherhood. That's what he says. Now, you're lacking, there's a serious defect. First of all, the person should be able to hear. He was doing the wrong thing. He was beating up a fellow Jew. Moshe wanted to stop that. And because he wanted to stop a fight, which was a good thing, and because he rebuked them, and he said that this is wickedness, baseless hatred, for no reason. So, but they couldn't take being rebuked. Then they became an enemy of his, and they're going to get even with him. Revenge. And in spite of the fact that he was helping the Jewish people and they were the slaves, they were going to betray him to the government. Because that's the next thing. The next pasuk says, now Moshe was afraid. He was afraid. Well, why be afraid? Why not plead with them not to snitch? He knew it's not going to help. Then the very next pasuk says, and Paro heard this thing, and Paro heard. So Paro heard. It doesn't say they told Paro. Interesting. It doesn't say they went and told Paro. Maybe that they wouldn't do. That would be too open, too brazen, too much guilt. But sometimes when you want to communicate, you want something to be known. There's other ways. You make sure that the word gets out. So you can always defend yourself. I didn't say anything. But Paro heard. And he sought to kill Moshe. And Moshe ran from Paro. And he dwelled in the land of Midian. and he dwelled by the well. The reason why the Torah is mentioning it is simply because it's important to the story, because an incident occurs. Then it says that, but this takes place many years later. It doesn't mean that as soon as he ran away and he took a break and he rested by the well and then this incident. That's not the way we have to understand it. It means he dwelled there for years, because the Ramban does a calculation of how many years he spent in the wilderness.
Doesn't that mean he
settled? The Ramban does the calculation, because when Moshe came back to Egypt, he was 80, because Aaron was 83, and Moshe was 80, okay, and he died at 120, which is 40 years later. So, how old was he when these events occurred, when he had to run away from Egypt? So he says somewhere either between 12 and 20, that's about as close as he can get it. Okay, so let's assume 20. So this would be 60 years later. 60 years he spent in the wilderness. But what he was doing was, it was really good for him. Because he was studying, he was learning, he was perfecting himself, and he emerged as the high, on the level of prophecy. So this is towards the end. Because this is towards the end of that period. As a result of what happens, he marries the daughter of Yisro, and he has this relation with Yisro, and then he's taking care of the sheep, and then God appears to him. So this is the way I'm learning it, according to the Ramban. This happens many years later. Now, it's not, we shouldn't read it like it happens 10 minutes after he runs away. Now, the Kohen of Midian, that's Yisro. Now, Yisro was a religious leader. It's very, very important to the story to understand that he was someone who renounced idolatry. He was a righteous individual, which means that he was probably raised with idolatry, but he renounced it. And according to Rashi, because of this, Rashi says that Rav Shebahan, he was a leader, a religious leader, and he separated from idolatry, and they banished him, because they were all idol worshippers. You know, it's like any religion, once you leave the sect, he was in a ban. That's very important to understand the story. So he had seven daughters, and they would come, and they would draw, and they would fill up the watering holes, the troughs. And the shepherds came and drove them away. And Moshe stood up by Yoshion and he saved them. See that? Mishisiu, Kimin Amaya Mishisiu. The same characteristic of Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu is an individual. That's very interesting though. You see, there's two elements over here. There's two elements. It's depicting Moshe Rabbeinu in relationship to his brethren. You know, that's a deeper, that's a primary kind of phenomenon. Your brothers. Your family comes first. But it wasn't just his brothers. His sense of justice was for all people. And he couldn't tolerate an injustice. He couldn't tolerate oppression. So again, Moshe arose. He couldn't be a bystander. And again, I had that point about the fact, he was a great person. I'm not just attributing it. You can't just attribute it to the fact that he was pulled out of the water. But all these things add up. And he watered the sheep. Now, let me ask you a question. What is a little bit difficult about this? Pasuk. Yeah. This incident is a little bit different than the first incident, for a number of reasons. The first instance, we can appreciate what he did. It makes sense to us. Because, obviously, Moshe was a capable individual, in terms of he knew how to fight. He was strong. He was very strong. You see that from the first story. Because he wouldn't have just started fighting with this Egyptian officer who would have killed him. We don't believe in that. So apparently he knew his strength. The Torah doesn't mention that, but you have to deduce it from what he did. Okay, and there he was saving a life, so he had to do it. In this situation, it's completely different. For two reasons. First of all, because you're fighting against a group of people. That's always, it doesn't matter who you are, you're like a gang. That's always much more dangerous. You see, go to the movies, you see these guys, you know, that can take on, right? And in the movies, these kind of things work. It's always dangerous even to take on two people. But certainly more, this is more than two, was the Roim, the shepherds. Because one guy could get behind you and hit you on the head with, you know, like, it's very, very dangerous.
Yeah, but these are nice, peace-loving shepherds.
It's much more dangerous over here. But also, for what? It doesn't seem to be that compelling. So what does it mean? They drove them off. And took so they'd have to wait online. That they'll come back. In other words, they're not going to stay there all day. Apparently, that's the way they treated them. So But and what's the damage? Oh, it's wrong, by the way. It's wrong. It's an injustice. But there's different kinds of injustices. There's different kinds of injustices. If you're gonna, sometimes you're waiting for a parking spot and somebody comes out and grabs it, or you're waiting online, and then they shut down this line, and then you're on the, you were the first. Finally, you waited like an hour, and then if whatever, you become on the back. It's an injustice. But I don't think you're gonna. Within reason, you're not going to go into a fight and risk your life for that kind of. What's the worst? So what's the worst that's going to happen? So they won't have their water. They'll have to wait, and then when the shepherds leave, they'll go back and they'll get their water. It's wrong. But you mean Moshe Rabbeinu's idea was that you have to fight for every single, no matter how big or how small. That's a little bit hard to understand. You know, you're sensitive to the Hebrew. You're sensitive to the Hebrew. When I read it, it says Moshe Vayoshion. That's a very strong Yeshua. That's a strong word to use if it's just the fact that he saved them from the inconvenience of having to wait. You know, that's a Yeshua. I mean, there must be something more going on over here. So what's very, very, also, by the way, another question I wanted to throw in was that in Yud Zion, at 17, to me, you have to explain, why did he water their sheep? Why did he? He was a rational individual. The injustice was only that they were driven away. They knew how to water their sheep. That is to say, if you stop off, you see someone's in trouble, someone's breaking into a house, and you run in and you save the person. Okay, so that's it. But now you're going to say, well, what else? Can I go shopping for you? I don't have to do your. I mean, that's your job. Why would Moshe have to spend the rest of the time watering their sheep? What was the reason behind that? I want to explain this on the basis of some objective factor. And that is to say that there are two levels. That to just come along and save them from the shepherds, there's nothing personal in that. That just shows that you're a person who cares about society. We can't have this going on in society. So it doesn't matter. I'm not doing it for you. It's a wrong. And that's a level of objective justice. So in other words, the girls had suffered an injustice. So one level is when you're a person of justice and you will not tolerate. That's all he had to do. As far as correcting the objective injustice, all Moshe had to do was drive away the shepherds. And that's it. Now go back to normal. You're supposed to do your job. I don't have to do your job. But he recognized that there's something else. That when a person suffers an injustice, that there's a human dimension, there's the dignity of the soul. It affects you in an emotional way. And that's even worse. Sometimes, it's interesting, sometimes you'll leave the store and let's say they made a mistake, they overcharged you. All right? And it bothers you. And it could be the amount is not that, it's not worth the trouble of going back, it could be a couple of dollars. But there's something in you that, like you feel, because you feel if somebody breaks into your car, and let's say it was minimal damage, it's not that, it's that assault on your sense of dignity, it's a violation. You see, it's an emotional, so that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was, the second level was to do something specially for them, to restore that sense of importance, that there is someone that, that was to restore the damage to their dignity as a human being. That's a different level that's compassion. So there's justice and compassion. That's why Moshe did it, in my opinion. Not because of any personal interest. Because, you see, he leaves the situation. Then the daughters of Yisro come home, and they came home early. So he says to them, why have you come home so quickly? So they said, an Egyptian man. To them, he appeared like an Egyptian. Saved us from the shepherds. Interesting. Saved us from the shepherds. Saved us. They're using very dramatic terms. Yeshua, Hatzalah, like it's a big thing here. And he also, see, they mentioned too, and also he drew the water for us. And water. So apparently more water had to be drawn. Whatever was there wasn't enough. And he also watered the, you see? And so he said to his daughters, and where is he? He rebuked, and where is he? What's the matter with you? Just in terms of Hakar Satov, you have to appreciate, be thankful. That's a very, very, very big principle. To be grateful for the good, to appreciate a good that somebody did for you. How did you abandon the man? Call him and he'll eat bread. And the rabbis say that's also a deeper in terms of a shidduch. You didn't recognize, yeah, you're wrong, you were too modest, too humble. You have to recognize the qualities of a person. Now, well, and let's see if we can tie it all together. You see another dimension of the greatness of Moshe. These are the two stories. That's all the biography we really know. Until God appears to him in the wilderness. But you see, a man of tremendous justice, strength, courage, and not only for his brothers, didn't abandon his brothers, but had a sense of responsibility to mankind per se, and not just objective justice so societies can function, but an element of compassion towards each individual. But, as I said, still in all, you have to explain why he went to such tremendous lengths to take on a gang this time. Apparently he knew he could do that too. Yeah, but it's always risky. We shouldn't think that he just goes and jumps in and starts fighting where he's going to get killed. He knew his strength. He was a person of great strength. He knew his strength. But still, it just seems too much of a risk for too little of an injustice. So big deal. So they'll wait a little bit longer. They won't come home early. They'll come home late today. It just seems too much. But I think that the answer is, as Rashi points out, Moshe was not doing this just to save them the time. He knew the story. They were being oppressed for a reason, because they had given up idolatry. And they had embraced the idea of the true God. That's a different story. That is to say that we have a responsibility to, and that's, Rashi says, that's why the shepherds. And they drove them away. That was the policy. Because of the ban. That's why the shepherds did it. The shepherds didn't do it because they were rude and they wanted to take their spot. No, they were respectful people, but they did it specifically. It was a form of trying to break them down so they return to idolatry. That's what Moshe said, this I have to fight for. That's a Yeshua. To save a person, that's a saving, because there was a danger that their spirit would be destroyed. How much can a person take of persecution? Many people give in under the persecution. So that's what he saw. And then he jumped in, and that's why he took the risk. Because that's worth taking a risk for. And that's why the Torah uses those strong terms. This is really a Yeshua. To save somebody from what? From a petty thing? That somebody took your place, and that's not a Yeshua. See, that's a... this is a real injustice. There's practical injustices in the world, but they're not that big in the scheme of things. I call this philosophically speaking, it's an injustice that goes to the heart of what life is about. That man was created to recognize, God, and that's something you have to fight for. So and that's why they said that Anish Mitzvah Hitzilanu saved us from the shepherds. It means that they were in the grip of these shepherds. They were being battered, so to speak. They were being abused because they had renounced idolatry. So that's why Moshe acted as he did. You'll see later on when he names his first child Gershom. Mm-hmm. Right? It's on the next page. But then, by the way, that's what happens, is that Moshe then agrees to live with the man, and he gives him Tzipporah, his daughter, for a wife. And she gave birth to a son. And he called his name Gershom. Very strange kind of name. Which means Ger, I was a stranger. Ger Izi Be'eretz Nachriya, in a foreign land. That sounds like a strange name to give a child. I mean, that doesn't sound like anything positive. But the truth of the matter is that for Moshe it was positive. That as a result of his initial experiences, he separated himself completely from society. He wanted to be completely absorbed in study and thinking and perfecting his mind. And so therefore he never assimilated into the society. And he was praising God for that. That experience, it's an interesting thing. To us it's very strange because we're totally social. And we look at the isolation as being a terrible thing. But for the great thinkers, to the contrary. You read about the Rambam, how he was deluged, you know, with all of his responsibilities because he was a great doctor. And he writes to a student that if you come to visit me, it was very difficult to visit, we have the letter. I won't be able to spend any time with you. And he gives all of his responsibilities and so on and so forth. And in one of his letters, he writes he's been managed to escape into a place where nobody goes, you know, like it's a miracle. So he has some free time, he could answer his letter that he wrote them. So they cherished, all the great rabbis cherished those periods of isolation when they could devote all their energies to study, to thinking. That's why we have such great rabbis. But it's not just rabbis. I mean, great thinkers in general are, to the contrary, they look at the social as being a very big distraction, because they were meant to be involved in the world of thought. Einstein writes about this, that he was also had this element of he was a thinker, and very reluctant to get involved in political activities. But he had a Jewish heart. He did care about Israel, and after the Nazism, and he was actively involved in supporting Israel. In fact, they wanted him to be the first president, but he refused to do so. He was not going to, no political appointment. So anyways, they were organizing this boat trip to Israel, in the 40s. And he was persuaded to join with other notables, and so on and so forth. And he writes about it, that, on the ship, and people would come up, people were coming to talk to him, to Einstein, to talk to him. And he was saying, can't do this again. He says, a thinker has to think. I remember that. A thinker has to be free to think. He's a thinker. He's not a social... not his kind of thing. So it's ironic. A person like that appreciates the isolation. And that's why I would say perhaps he retained his Egyptian, That was better for him that way. To retain it, that's why he was separate. He was able to be his own person. I'm not saying he never saw people. Obviously, he had to have certain, interchanges with people and all of that. But essentially, he was by himself.